Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Here's a number for you. Americans aged 13 to 17 now send and receive, on average, 3,339 text messages a month, more than 100 a day. And telephone calls, old-fashioned, voice-to-voice, person-to-person conversation, past its peak and falling. Talking on the phone is headed out, or at least way down. Texting rules. What does that mean for how we interact as humans? This hour on Point, texting takes over, and where that takes the American conversation. You can join the conversation. Do you text or talk? And what would your phone records, your cell phone records, show? What do we gain? What do we lose when we go from voice to text? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from New York City is Catherine Rossman, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. She's been reporting on the rise of texting and the decline of the traditional phone call. She's also author of the new memoir, If You Knew Susie, A Mother, A Daughter, A Reporter's Notebook. Katie Rossman, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Give us the numbers. What's going on? We got this 3,000 plus for 13 to 17-year-olds that's sending and receiving texts more than 100 a day. Wow. How does that compare with other age groups?
Well, it's much larger than other age groups. We asked the Nielsen Company to look at some data for us, and they went through 60,000 cell phone or mobile phone bills. And what they found was this astronomical number of texts being sent and received among teenagers, which is obviously sort of jaw-dropping and interesting. But what is even more interesting in many ways is that among 45 to 54-year-olds, the number of texts that have been sent and received year to year is up 75%, much smaller number. But it shows the direction that adults are going in, which I think is really eye-opening in terms of what's happening in the overall culture.
So people 45 to 54 sending and receiving more than 300 texts a month now. That's maybe, you know, not even quite 10% of what teenagers are doing, but that's new. And next to those numbers, you've got an average number of monthly talk minutes down 5% in the period.
And phone calls are getting shorter. Absolutely. I think that more and more people are relying on text messaging to impart information. People don't want to be on the phone where, heaven forbid, they might actually get stuck in a conversation that goes beyond what they originally intended. They don't want small talk. They just want to sort of get and receive the data that they need and go about their multitasking, distracted days.
Is it possible? I mean, 5% overall down. That's talk minutes among 18 to 24-year-olds down. Talk minutes down 17%. That's a significant decline. People are talking about telephone conversations, voice conversations, having passed a tipping point, Katie, into the texting era. You agree?
I think the numbers make it hard to disagree. And certainly when we looked at the numbers, we knew that we had a story. We knew we had a story before that just based on what I was noticing in terms of nobody listening to voicemail messages, even my contemporaries, and I'm 38, so I'm out of the teenage demographic, telling me that, you know, if they didn't listen to my message, if I really have something important to say to them, to text them. And these are not necessarily tech-savvy, early adopter-type peoples. Another point that's interesting in terms of the data that you cited is that for the first time that 18 to 24-year-old age group is they have fallen from the number one spot as the people who are talking on the phone the most. They're now second to the older demographic of 24 to 30-something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you think of teenagers and people in college and young adults sort of yapping away on the phone all the time, and they're now speaking less than people who are older than them, which is, it's all noteworthy.
Why? I mean, part of the reason is the technology. It's there so we can do it, but, you know, we could leave it lying there, but yet we're not, especially from the young end up. We're embracing this like crazy. Why? Why this big shift toward texting?
Well, I think, as I understand it from my reporting, the more technology we have access to and the more sophisticated our technology becomes and accessible, the more control we want over the way that we communicate. And in many ways, texting is the ultimate in control. You say what you want. You keep it brief. There's very few pleasantries. You don't respond to that which you don't want to respond to, and you respond when you want. It's all about, you know, exactly what you choose to do at the moment you choose to do it. And so we are cutting off the free flow of dialogue and conversation that happens on the phone or obviously in face-to-face conversation.
You're quoting here a 21-year-old marketing major at Emerson College saying she and her friends almost never talk on the phone. You quote her saying, if I were to call someone, it would have to be urgent. She said, otherwise, this is just a phone call. She says, otherwise, it's sort of rude and invasive.
I mean, this
was the big communications, you know, technology of way the better part of a whole century, the 20th century.
Yeah, and it's really fascinating that it's a matter of etiquette. They think it's rude to call. And certainly you see that a phone call is more invasive in some ways than a text-based communication, whether it's an email or text message, which you can look at and respond to at your whim. But the idea of a telephone call being rude is just such a seismic shift in terms of the culture of communicating. It's really significant.
And here, you know, the phone call, not to mention voicemail, as you say. Here's from Wired magazine calling and say, voicemail is now a slap in the face. It basically says, I don't want to take the time out of my day to text you, so I'm going to take the time out of your day to make you dial into a voicemail account and hear my words in real time out with voice.
Yeah, and I found that, first of all, there's market research showing that there's an average lag time of 5 hours between the time a voicemail is left and listened to, which makes it not terribly effective in the quick-paced world that we live in. Also, it's generally said that it takes 60 to 65 seconds to listen to a 30-second voicemail. By the time you call and you put in your number and your PIN number and all that jazz, you've spent twice the amount of time that you would than the person spent in actually leaving the message. And that's why voice-to-text technology is becoming more and more ubiquitous, and more people are using PhoneTag and other systems in which your voicemail is transcribed and sent via text message to the person who you left it for.
And this, in an overall rapidly changing kind of era of communication, I don't think many 20th century people could have imagined that we'd go from talking to, in some sense, typing our messages to one another. But that's exactly what's happening. Catherine Rossman, please stand by with The Wall Street Journal in New York City. You've been doing some great reporting. I want to bring in Lee Rainey as well, director of the Pew Internet and American Life Project. Lee, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So you guys have some new numbers out, too, and they're basically about cell phone distribution ownership. 96% of teens now carry a cell phone, but do they use it to talk, Lee?
Not nearly as much as they use it to text. It's certainly in the frequency numbers. We ask teenagers about the number of times per day that they are in touch with their friends using different devices, including face-to-face meetings outside of school. And for the first time in our data early this year, we saw that texting had overtaken every other form of frequency of contact with people, of calls on cell phones, calls on landlines, face-to-face meetings, email, messaging through social networking services, the whole roster of ways that people talk. Now, texting is at the top of the list.
And phone calls emerging as kind of rude. I'm reading Clive Thompson here. He's writing about the death of the phone call. And he says, you know, if I dial you up, I don't know if you're busy. I don't know if, you know, you have no idea why I'm calling. We've got to get into that whole minuet of an actual conversation. That's an imposition, Lee.
And there's a new etiquette and new strategic thinking that people go through as they think about the communications they want to impart to other people in their lives. Texting is perfect for those simple, quick-hit ways that you want to share some information, don't necessarily need to hear any input back, or certainly don't need it at the same moment you're sharing it. And so that's why Katie's story was so great on this. It pointed out that certain kinds of communications are just better completed in this sort of asynchronous, I don't need to talk to you kind of form. But But the way people now think about phone calls is it's for serious business. If you've got a multitude of things to settle, it's not just sort of one option, yes, no, but you've got several things to ponder. Or if you've got sort of serious social business to do, it's not sufficient to be texting to someone. Then people will go to a telephone call, and it signals urgency in a way that it never used to before. So now we sort of have to allocate our thinking about different kinds of communications depending on what we want to accomplish in the task.
Katie, we've got people now actually arranging voice phone calls via text because just to call in cold may be rude. Of course, if it's urgent, that's another thing. But there's also the issue people are raising, Katie, of whether this, if texting becomes, and it has, the norm among the young, what does that do to nuance? What does that do to richness of social interaction, Katie?
Well, I think plenty of nuance gets lost. I mean, even in email, there's plenty of times I've had email interactions with my husband where I've thought we were in a fight when we were finished with our email, or he didn't know we were in a fight when we finished with our email, because tone gets lost and intent and affect, and that's a big part of conversation. And in text messages, we reduce our words, to as very few as possible. And obviously, more and more is going to get lost then.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about texting taking over, taking on the phone, talking on the phone, headed out, and the rise of a whole new era in how we communicate. Here's the sound of another time. The Wall Street Journal, Katie's paper, put together a kind of timeline of memorable pop culture moments that hinge on telephone calls. Here's a scene from Alfred Hitchcock's 1954 Dial M for Murder. Grace Kelly answers a mysterious phone call before an attempt is made on her life.
Hello? Hello?
The hello, into the dark, that's not the way anymore. Text comes in, you know who sent it. The phone rings, you may or may not even answer it. Catherine Rossman is with us from the Wall Street Journal. Lee Rainey, he's director of the Pew Internet and American Life Project in Washington. Let's get our callers in here. David, Columbia, South Carolina, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks.
What do you know?
Well, I'm 20, and I text probably 10,000 messages a month or so. And I think that one of the main reasons that I do is because you can say something to someone in text, and if they don't answer, it's not awkward. You know, if it takes somebody 30 minutes to answer a text message you sent them, it's nowhere near as awkward as if you call somebody and they sit on the phone for 5 minutes silently trying to figure out what they want to say.
So you are a 10,000 text a month man. That means we really appreciate your taking the burden of picking up the phone to call us today. It must be living hell, David. But yeah, 10,000 a month. I mean, what do you say in all those texts? I might make. I can't picture it.
Well, I have a girlfriend that lives in New York.
Okay.
So
okay, I'm getting that.
I text her very frequently.
Right.
But anything and everything, and I think that the day of abbreviating everything is gone, too, with the full keyboard phones.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the nuance of language isn't as lost as much today as it was in the late 90s.
So when you have kind of lovey-dovey interactions long distance with your girlfriend in New York, you're doing that by text?
Yeah.
I mean, what about the sweet sound of her voice?
It's not the same over the phone anyways.
It's not the same over the phone? What do you mean?
I mean, it doesn't sound like her. I don't sound like myself on the phone.
Right.
You don't sound like, I don't know how you sound in real life, but.
Wow.
The thing about text messages, I can send her a message when I think she might be asleep, and it's not going to wake her up with the long ring of a phone call, and it'll still be there in the morning.
Yeah.
And she won't have to check her voicemail, which is obnoxious. My dad still calls me and leaves me voicemails saying, call me back, which just bugs me.
Well, that's just great, David. I mean, I definitely see the advantages, but this is a big change. We've got a tweet right here. It says from Kylum, says that voicemail has become the most hated thing in America. No answer to a call. I will hang up and text them. And David doing that 10,000 times a month. David, thanks so much for your call.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I know what an effort it must have been. I want to bring right here, if we can, Naomi Barron, professor of linguistics at American University, author of Always On, Language in an Online and Mobile World. She joins us from Copenhagen, as it happens. Naomi Barron, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thank you very much for having me.
You're our linguistics guru. There's David. You know, the love of his life is he's in the Carolinas, she's in New York, and it's 10,000 texts a month. Does it sound like love to you?
It may well be. One of the things we know is males and females don't necessarily feel exactly the same way about talking versus texting. And some research that I've done, if you ask females, how important is it to talk rather than text because you want to hear the other person's voice, they'll say pretty important. Males, on average, will say it's less important. So there is something of a gender issue. This is not to say that his girlfriend is feeling dissed because she's having to text back, but there is a little bit of a gender issue of, you know, I would, even if your voice isn't totally natural, it's better than no voice.
Well, maybe, but I happen to know a lot of teenage texters who are female in around my household, and let me tell you, they seem to communicate just about everything via the little tiny keyboard.
Well, teenagers and getting a little bit older may be a little bit different. A 13-year-old may not really have an interest in voice as much as, say, a 23-year-old. But I think there's some really interesting reasons that maybe we haven't touched on yet about why people are doing so much texting.
Let's hear it. We're really curious.
Okay. Texting is typing. And typing, as opposed to talking, is not new. If you go back to, the late 1980s, but more the early to mid-1990s, people, and I'll speak for the United States now, are starting to do a lot of email. And then by the late 1990s, an incredible mm-hmm. amount of instant messaging, and then blogs are coming along. We're also doing a lot of word processing. If you were to ask the average American, say, in 1960, you think we should all become typists? That person would laugh in your face.
Well, yeah.
No, we talk. That's what we do face-to-face.
That's human.
What telephones are so good for. We're all going to learn how to type, but indeed we have. So this movement began, again, talking about the States, long before texting became popularized, which wasn't until about 2004, 2005.
You are a linguistics maven. Has it changed the quality of our communication?
Quality is so hard to measure. What definitely has happened is it's changed the attention that we're paying to our interaction with another person. So I think what happened is as we began to being able to do things online and then eventually Americans were late in the game, eventually being able to do things with cell phones, mobile phones, we came to feel I can multitask. I can do many, many things at the same time on my own terms. However, all of the psychological literature really does suggest if you're trying to do two or more things that involve your brain and then your brain and some social interaction at the same time, something has to go. You don't do everything as well as had you done them seriatim, individually. So what's happened is we no longer notice that we're not as engaged as at least we could be if we were just listening to that other person, voice to voice on the phone, voice to voice, face to face, or simply typing to that person and not doing something else in terms of multitasking at the same time.
Here's a tweet from D. Says, as a 27Y/O-year-old, I much prefer texting for exchanging quick info. Who, what, where, when. Phone calls seem intrusive. Lee, what about the quality, and that is a very malleable notion of communication here?
Oftentimes, people are acting multimodally. You talked about people who send text to set up phone calls. In other respects, people use texting as a way to have communication that they couldn't otherwise have. I'm sure one of the things that David does with his girlfriend is send her texts when he's sitting at his office or sitting in meetings or in places where he could not possibly place a phone call. And so maybe that adds to the quality of his connection with his girlfriend in ways that the absence of that communication would obviously not have. The other piece of etiquette that drives people towards texting now is that there's such annoyance in public about phone calling in public places, when you're on the street, when you're in a railroad car, when you're in a on the bus or someplace like that. There is now a growing backlash against people who talk too loudly, share too much detail, and are just inflicting their private lives and private communications on everyone else. And so that sort of covert way of communicating through text is an advantage to people who don't want to offend others and also want to have those quick hit communications that they couldn't otherwise have.
More tweets typed out for us here. AV says, texting is more convenient than a phone call, and the person can respond at their leisure. Calls are for long conversation. And then here's Septimus, and this is, I have to admit, even I begin to feel this way. Septimus writes, phone calls have always been rude. That a ringing bell has priority over real life is the anomaly we put up with for a century. Katie, I think people are embracing that like crazy. I mean, many households I know, the telephone gets no respect anymore. It rings if there's still a landline at all. You know, it rings and people kind of glance at it and don't hop to.
Well, I think that telemarketers have played some small role in that also. Just they have created the home phone as this sort of an annoying thing to be avoided. I feel like if people want to find me, they'll find me on my cell phone, text, email, Twitter, whatever. I cannot remember the last time I've listened to a voicemail message on my home phone, and I don't even want to know how many there are stacking up.
Oh boy.
And it's, you know, something that Lee said that I think is really interesting is that the mobile phone, which obviously is now totally ubiquitous, has changed our attitudes about speaking in public. Just like he said, the phone conversation used to be a private thing, and then it became something that moved into public space. Mm-hmm. And text now gives us that privacy again in the public space, but it restores the privacy that the home and office phone conversation used to afford us.
Many different ages getting in here. Here's Albert writes, I'm 47, text all the time, more than talk on the phone. I guess I was an early adopter. He says, even my mother now texts, and she's 68. Sarah from Somerville, Massachusetts. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi. You know, I'm in that older demographic also, and I also was an early adopter, but this is how I use my phone in texting.
Yeah.
I text all the time, but I text to my kids, my 20-something kids.
Is that the only way to get to them now?
Well, it's one way, and at first they thought I was cool, and now they've just, accepted me as one of their communicators.
Right.
But I talk to my girlfriends all day on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I still use the phone all day long. I text my kids, and my husband, I leave a voicemail because he can't figure out how to use any of those things.
So you're segmenting, Sarah. Naomi, there you go. I mean, that's the moment, I guess, of transition that we're in.
And not everybody is going to make the same transitions. One of the things you find, particularly when you look not just across generations within the States, but when you look cross-culturally around the world, is different cultures have different notions of what makes sense vis-a-vis how much you talk and how much you text. So in a study I did 2 years ago and comparing five different countries around the world, I found Swedes really talked and texted about the same amount. And it wasn't a cost issue, it's just that's what they did. And they didn't actually do that much of either, as opposed to, say, Koreans who were texting all the time. And now Americans are starting to catch up. But one of the things I wanted to say about this privacy issue is indeed you don't have to be talking in public. You can have your private conversations even with other people around you. But think of what happens at a meeting, or I stand in front of students all day. What happens in a classroom? The privacy of that social interaction is broken over and over and over again by people texting.
Mm-hmm.
That is, there used to be a notion of a conversation, of a social dynamic of people being able to communicate with one another, and something rude is happening. It's not a ringing bell, but it's the loss of people's attention. It's the loss of feeling they care what you're saying, and I think that's a real social problem we have to come to grips
yeah,
with.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You call it privacy, but it's attention from another angle, certainly, or focus, very hard. It's like quicksilver to get your hands around it sometimes now. Stephanie, in Brighton, Massachusetts, you're on the air, Stephanie. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment that I have, my mother actually brought this up to me when I was in college, how Instant Messenger started changing the way I was communicating with all my friends. And she used to comment that even my relationships with my boyfriends were changing because back when you're in high school, you have all these long-winded conversations and, you know, late-night conversations, and they're spontaneous and they're kind of quirky. And now it's become, I've been dating someone on and off for 18 years.
Mm, whoa.
And it's now it's become almost very calculated conversations through text.
Stephanie, you've been dating them for 18 years. How old are you?
I'm 28, and this is our fourth time around. So
since you were 10 years old. Okay. That's, maybe you should stick with that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I would say, you know, I don't think an eighth grade or a fifth grade crush really counts, you know, as much as it does now. But it's almost sad that I almost felt closer to him when we were 18, when we had more more quirky conversations. And now it's like I pay attention to more about exactly what I want to say and exactly how I would like to, you know, start a fight or end a fight.
Right, and via text, and so you don't have all the what all the operatic sort of elements, but maybe not the same romantic resonance. I mean, Kate, thank you, Stephanie. Katie Rossman, you know, there it is, fourth time around at age 28, and Stephanie feels a kind of reduced relationship because it's gone to text, and yet it's so convenient to have that relationship.
Well, and I think when she says that she's calculated and what she says, that speaks to the issue of control that Naomi has studied and sort of noticed in a lot of her research. It does. It lets us say what we want to say, how we want to say it. We can put a lot of thought into crafting it, which is one of the beauty of written communication, is that it allows us that thought. But so in my mind, it's not all bad in that way. But at the same time, if it's at the expense of voice-to-voice interaction, let alone face-to-face interaction, it's coming at a cost.
Lee, here's a web comment. It says, I'm officially old at 39. I don't get texting. 20-somethings all around me with their faces glued to their cell phone screens, tweeting and texting. I just can't figure out the appeal of it. You know, there is a way, Lee, in which that the texting, it's got you in touch maybe with thousands of people, but it may be cutting you off, as Naomi was suggesting, from the people right around you and the focus and attention between you.
Yes, this whole element of constant connectivity to the whole world who has access to the same technology is a very new development in human experience. And so we're adjusting to it. We're creating new norms and new elements of etiquette around it. And there's a wonderful phrase that applies to this age of mobile connectivity that Kenneth Gergen coined. He talked about absent presence. And it speaks to the issue that Naomi was raising, where people literally can be interfered with in the middle of their conversations by the ringing of their device or the text that comes into them. And even though they might be in the same physical space as you are, they're off somewhere else with some other person, with some other social engagement, because that's the thing that they're devoting their attention to. It's a big change in human relationships when these interruptions can occur virtually nonstop. And of course, with this enormously powerful device now that isn't just for phoning and texting, but it takes pictures, it takes videos, mm-hmm. It gives us a web browser. And so this story, from a great perspective of journalists and researchers, is going to keep evolving.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about texting taking over, talking on the phone, headed out, and the rise of a whole new era in how we communicate. With Wall Street Journal reporter Catherine Rossman in New York, Lee Rainey with the Pew Internet and American Life Project in Washington, and Naomi Barron of American University Professor of Linguistics there joining us today from Copenhagen. And let's not forget that the telephone was not always so grand either. Here's a classic moment from the movie, Stanley Kubrick movie, Dr. Strangelove, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. The President of the United States, played by Peter Sellers, is on the hotline in an awkward telephone conversation over nuclear war, potentially, with the Soviet premier.
Hello? Hello, Dmitry. Listen, I can't hear too well. Do you suppose you could turn the music down just a little? Oh, that's much better. Yes. Fine, I can hear you now, Dmitry. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good, then. Well, then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine, then, and I'm fine.
Peter Sellers and Dr. Strangelove, and if you ever wondered or forgot how inane the telephone could be, there's the example. Anna in Boston. Anna, you're on the air.
I was just calling because as a 28-year-old, I kind of lived on both sides of this, where I really actually didn't have a cell phone until I was 18 and probably wasn't really into texting until recently. And I have a set of friends who are younger than me and a set of friends that are older, and I find that with my younger friends, they really don't want me to call them. They expect us a text message. And, you know, I've had times where they've texted me really serious things where I feel like a conversation is much more in order, and they're very unwilling. There's a lot of pushback on that, whereas my friends who are my age and a little bit older, we still call each other regularly, we'll text, and we constantly talk about how easy it is to find ourselves texting because it's just plain simpler. And also, we just still really firmly believe that having a conversation is a really important part of social activity. Even, like, knowing how to confront somebody, not just face-to-face, but being able to call them and not being afraid. So it's just interesting to watch kind of being in the middle. And I fight myself from constantly texting. So thank you for having this topic.
No, I'm glad, Anna. And, you know, it's interesting. At 28, you're kind of sitting right on the demographic continental divide. Which way do you see the tide running, Anna? Is voice going to hang in there, or is text just winning hands down as we move forward?
Taking over, and it's interesting that it was brought up too that an older demographic is doing it, because I actually have told my mom, stop texting me, you know, you need to call me, I'm not going to text about this, so I'm a little afraid that texting is taking over, but I think at least my demographic is still trying to hold on as best as we can to good old-fashioned conversation. So.
And I'm very happy for your call. We've got a couple of web posts here from Brian, who says, the new etiquette idea of texters feeling that phone calls are invasive is not exactly new. Alexander Graham Bell, the inventor of the telephone, he writes, purportedly refused to have a phone in his house because he believed it was unseemly for someone to come calling via the phone without first presenting their card. What goes around apparently comes around, he writes. And then, Naomi, I want to put this to you. Dave says, I'm sure there are ways to include nuance in texting as well, just because us old people, he writes, don't know what it is. Did people bemoan the loss of body language and visual cues when the telephone became big? What about it, Naomi?
Oh, well, they shouted originally on the phone because they couldn't get your communication through otherwise.
Yeah.
But the analogy that I like to make is between any kind of written communication online or on a phone and a letter. We don't complain much these days about letters not being able to, we don't write too many of them these days as well,
right.
I know, but we don't complain that you can't get your nuance across. Why? Because in writing a letter, you stop and you think, is this exactly what I want to say? Is there a different word I want to use? And as a matter of fact, some people in instant messaging actually sit and edit their messages to make sure they have the right tone. One of the reasons that emoticons were invented by Scott Feldman back in the early 1980s.
The little smiley faces and all that, yeah.
Smileys and winkies and, well, first it was smileys and frownies and winkies, and then all the rest came along, was because there was a fear you couldn't get clear what tonality, what emotion there was to go with your message. But as Scott Feldman himself said on the 25th anniversary of the smiley, if you took the time to write carefully,
You don't need those extra symbols. And I think part of the question as to whether we're going to be clear in our messages is whether we take the time, whether we're texting or not, to carefully craft our message.
But you know, with two thumbs or even with a better keyboard, I mean, isn't there a reductionist inevitability in texting? How long do you want to type? How marvelous is this prose ever going to be, Naomi?
Well, haikus are short, uh-huh. but when well done, eloquent.
No, that's so almost a haiku right there.
But I think the issue is, what is our attitude towards what this communication medium is about? I mean, there are texting poetry contests that are run in the UK, and there's some really nice poetry that's created. The question is, how much thought do we put into whether we speak face-to-face or whether we write something as a text? What is our investment in our clarity? And my concern is, if you're sending, whether it's 3,000 or 10,000 texts a month, how clear can you be? There isn't time to really craft, even in a semi-serious way, what you're doing.
I mean, this gets to be pretty important, whether we actually know one another. Brinley in Natick, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Brinley.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm calling because one of the things I've noticed with texting is you lose tone of voice, and it's something that always really bothers me. Like, sometimes when you text, it gets misconstrued as sarcasm or misconstrued as anger
mm-hmm.
or flippant or any kind of manner that you don't get when you're actually talking on the phone. When you're having the conversation and you hear the inflection and the tone in the voice, it changes the conversation entirely. It goes in a whole different direction than it does when it's texting. We've condensed it so much in texting that you miss that emotion.
Is it? But on the other hand, and this seems to be what Katie Rossman's reporting, is that any number of texters kind of feel liberated by that. They don't have to deal with the aspect of emotion. They can sort of reduce it, hold it at arm's length. They don't have the same social vulnerability, Brinley, in a text.
I think that that's true, but I think that it's somewhat of a cop-out. And I think that when it comes to business, unless you're a very eloquent writer, that oftentimes it can get you in trouble or have a thought misconstrued because it came across as stiff or, I don't know, a better way to say it. But
yeah, you know, I think you're pretty clear. Brinley, thanks for calling. Katie, what about it? Does tone come into play in texting?
I think it depends how much time and thought you put into the tone of what you're texting. And I think what we're all saying is that you can do it if you have time, but if you're sending 10,000 texts a month, you might not have time. I would point out, though, that there's plenty of miscommunication that comes from casual conversation as well. I think we have come to speak on the phone so much and so frequently, we don't necessarily put an incredible amount of thought into what we're saying. My sister lives in Los Angeles, and we talk on the phone 6 or 7 times a day, probably. And if I remember what it used to mean to have a long-distance phone call, I used to think about what you were going to say, sometimes make a list of the things you wanted to tell somebody. And now, you know, all of that has been lost, too. We're just – communication is – there's such a volume of it that I think we can be thoughtless in what and how we communicate, almost no matter what the medium of the communication is.
Unlimited minutes programs or unlimited texting – Lee, here's a couple. One tweet. Can a text be artful? Can you, just the letter U, compose it in a way that's more expressively creative, witty, unique than a conversation in only 160 words? Question mark, exclamation mark. And then there's the issue of presence, Lee, that we were talking about. Here's a tweet that's from Noslik. Says, in 2008, in Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, I saw Buddhist monks texting while chanting during a service. Roll over, Buddha.
Obviously, that's the world has changed when it's gotten that far. And it's interesting to see now that we are reallocating our communications patterns. Some things that used to feel appropriate for voice now are perfectly happily accomplished through text. Some things that used to be really important to accomplish face-to-face can be done by electronic means. And so we're rearranging the landscape of communication. And one of the most interesting domains of this, of course, is inside the family, where our project have now heard about parents who make up rules about when you can text and when you must talk. We've heard about families who, for instance, say to their teenage children, if you are going to break up with your boyfriend or girlfriend, you must use your voice.
The parents telling the child this.
The parents telling that you can't, you know, there's a fear that, you will go through more serial relationships. The relationship won't have any meaning. The partner deserves at least the courtesy of hearing your voice to say, I'm not going out with you anymore.
Naomi, do you think we'll get that kind of new etiquette? That's imposed from above by communicators of a different generation on children, but maybe that's just history. Maybe that goes with them.
The larger question is, what epistemic authority do parents have over children in general, whether it has to do with doing your homework or practicing your musical instrument or how you drive, are you going over the speed limit? All sorts of things socially have been changing in the United States, and typically it's parents no longer have much sway, unfortunately. There's one other point that I think is important to add to this discussion, and that is, what is the downside in the eyes of texters themselves to all this texting? Because we talk about the advantages, and indeed there are many, but one of the disadvantages, if you actually ask people, so do you like what you're doing with your phone, or what are the words that come to mind when you think of your phone? And what they will tell you is, I feel dependent, I feel addicted, I feel trapped, I feel chained, I feel stressed, because they feel, you know, I can't get off this treadmill. I have to always be available to people. And yes, it's wonderful that I can reach them when I want to, but I feel I don't have a choice in the matter. And this, I think, is a dimension that most people don't want to admit unless a researcher asks them, in which case we see a real dark side to what's happening with this explosion in texting.
Addicted, maybe tethered to the cell phone now. That reminds me, Naomi, David Carr with the New York Times writing recently that he sees the way people fiddle with their cell phones and their body language, the way they use them in public as a kind of habitual gestures. And he said it looks like the new cigarette. It used to be the pack of cigarettes and the cigarette. There was all this social kind of something to do when you were killing time or to signal cool to somebody else. He said, well,
or
maybe
to avoid conversation with them. We have data
yes.
that says people are using their phone to avoid people they know, not just strangers.
Or just to look down. And I'm sure I've seen people who are pretending to be texting, Katie, because they don't want to talk to anybody around them.
I'm sure. It's a way to avoid eye contact, and it's a tick, and I think sort of the cigarette analogy is a good one. And I can add something to the generational discussion, which is I will take a picture of my 4-year-old with my iPhone, and he'll say, okay, Mommy, but don't tweet that.
Oh, wow. Just between us, Mom, and he's 4 years old.
He's 4 years old. He also asked if we had Fox back yet because we have cable vision. I have no idea how he picks all this up, but they do. They do. And it's I can't even imagine what it's going to be like for my kids who are 1 and 4, who when my son asks me a question, I don't have the answer to it. He says, well, look it up on your phone.
Well, 4-year old raised on Fox. Oh boy. And I've got a comment from the website. Somebody worried about my job security. Preet says, imagine on point without a conversation, just using text. Oh boy, watch out. Brandon in Columbia, South Carolina. Brandon, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah.
Going to try to keep this brief because I know you're running low on time. Basically, texting, my least favorite form of communication, flat out. I'm 24, so I know I'm a bit of an anomaly there.
Okay.
But I miss the instantaneousness of it. I don't like, you know, sending off a text and then maybe not hearing from someone for 3 hours or whatever. I have had lengthy back-and-forth texting things that covered the same conversation I could have had in a minute-long phone conversation.
So does that make you a social outcast at age 24, Brandon? Do people look at you like, what's wrong with you? You want to talk?
Amongst my friends, it's actually not that weird. My friends have a tendency to actually call more than we text. Text is more along the lines of, if we want to do like an info dump that we don't need a reply to. Personally, I instant message a lot because there's that instant thing there. You still have that mm-hmm. back and forth of a real conversation that is just missing in text. But you, like, I'm a fidgeter. I don't like actually having to hold the phone up. I'm only, like, not on speakerphone right now.
Right.
It's a courtesy to you.
Right. Thanks so much, Brandon. Yeah, I appreciate that deep bow. Our time grows short, but I appreciate your call. I don't know, Naomi, maybe with Facebook and IM and texting and everything else, maybe we don't need long calls anymore. People are keeping up on what's going on, 100 different ways, Naomi.
But what is it they're communicating about? That is, if you actually sit and do an analysis of those
200 texts a day, 500 texts a day. What's the content of them? And an awful lot of it is pay or yeah or hi.
Okay,
or
but add in
boring.
Facebook with the albums of photographs, and you can see what went on last night. And
you can spend your whole life doing Facebook and not getting to do anything else. So it was a study that the Kaiser Family Foundation did now about a year ago that said that teenagers are spending more than 7.5 hours a day using media of varying sorts.
And a lot of it with their thumbs. Is the very expression...
No, that's extra. That's about an hour and a half in addition to that 7.5 hours. Where did school go? Where did sleep go?
What about this? You're into linguistics, ling, as in tongue. Should you be a digitist instead? Is the tongue history now? Is it all about the thumbs?
Well, I mean, part of the question was, are we going to stop doing all this texting business because it's so much easier just to do voice, right? Voice recognition stuff, you can stop typing. But what's really clear is a lot of people don't want to have their voices heard, and they don't want to work synchronously. They want to have control over when they have communication with whom. And control, has the good news and the bad news associated with it. The good news is you can contact people at times it's not disturbing them. But the bad news is you redefine what your social relationship is if you feel you can start and stop an interaction anytime you want. Think of all the times.
We're out of time right there, Naomi, and I'm sorry for it. Naomi Barron, you're great. Lee Rainey with Pew, you're terrific as well. And Katie Rossman, Catherine Rossman with The Wall Street Journal. Great to have you all. We'll go out with Lady Gaga. Telephone, last word for today. At least we can still hear it. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.